Lecture 6 in the Staying Connected Selected Talks and Meditations of Rudolf Steiner. This one's called Works of Art, Acts of Grace. Given in Berlin, December 7th, 1915. The Introduction. It is important to direct our thoughts to the realm between death and a new birth, because this will help us to live our earthly lives more fully. Therefore, we must always hold the mystery of death before us as a key to many of life's mysteries. A human being dies and passes through the gate of death. That human being enjoyed relationships while on earth, and those who remain on earth retain memories of the departed loved one. Such memories differ from all others because the being who is remembered is still present, but in the spiritual world. Nevertheless, the fact remains that a human soul becomes a memory. In other words, we carry an image of a being in the spiritual world, and that being in the spiritual world may perceive these images as well as the thoughts and feelings that surround them. We should note that for those who have died and dwell in the spiritual world, the earthly world is an quote-unquote other world. The spiritual world itself has become their world, and to engage in relationships there requires great inner activity on their part. But their quote-unquote other world, which is this world to us, rises spontaneously into their awareness. Our memories rise to them. How do they experience these? To answer such a question, we must first ask it with all the intensity, seriousness, and attention we can muster, and then wait. The answer will come by grace. In this case, the answer is that the dead experience our thoughts and feelings as quote-unquote art, or quote-unquote creation. They experience our memories and loving thoughts analogously to the way we experience art in this world. Not only do we then become living books, quote-unquote, for the dead, we also become their art. This is the deeper meaning of remembering the dead. Something in our memories transcends the ordinary level of existence. For the dead, this functions just as beauty does in our world. Thus the two worlds, the earthly and the supra-earthly, are intimately interconnected. Our inner world is their outer world. How much richer our lives would be if we were conscious of this. Works of Art, Acts of Grace. Berlin, December 7th, 1915. Spiritual science seeks to show the connection that exists in every domain between the spiritual worlds and the world that while in our earthly bodies we perceive through our senses and grasp with our reason. In recent lectures, I have been especially concerned with considering the connection that exists between the life we lead as souls, between death and rebirth, and the life we pass through here, while incarnated in a physical body. It is important to remember that we must always bear firmly in mind the reality that as long as we live in physical bodies, we must direct our thoughts to the sphere we will experience after death and before rebirth. We direct our thoughts there not to satisfy mere curiosity, but because we have been able to convince ourselves through spiritual science that when we direct our thoughts to the other world, we can make a contribution to this world, by ennobling and invigorating the concepts we need for our doing, thinking, and feeling. We must therefore hold firmly to the thought that many of life's secrets can be solved only if we have the courage to approach what may be called the riddle of death. Today, in order to consider the connection between the spiritual and the sense worlds from a particular point of view, I want to begin with an observation that is trivial and yet contains profound feeling. We shall start with a fact we have often spoken of. A human being passes through the gate of death. I repeat, we start with something that is an everyday occurrence, but one connected with very deep experiences, experiences that grip us in the depths of our soul. As you know, when we stand face to face with human beings here in the physical world, we form thoughts that can unite us with them. We surround the person with feelings of sympathy, antipathy, and so on. We feel either friendship or enmity. In brief, we form a certain relation to another person here in the physical world. This relation may arise through ties of blood, or it may be brought about by the preferences that arise in daily life. All this may be summed up in the expression, quote, the relation of human beings to one another, unquote. When someone we have been united with through various ties leaves the physical world and passes through the gate of death, at first that person's memory remains, that is, a collection of feelings and thoughts we have experienced as a result of our relation with that person. But since the person has passed from us through the gates of death, the thoughts and feelings that united us now live on in a very different manner. While the person lived with us here on the physical plane, we knew that at any time, in addition to the relation our souls had formed, the outer physical reality itself might also appear. We knew that we could bring our inner experience to bear upon this outer reality, and if at any time the person had somehow changed, we had to expect that the feelings we formerly had toward them would also change in one way or another. We do not often think of the radical difference it makes when suddenly, or even not suddenly, the moment comes after which we can carry in our soul only the memory of our friend, when we know, my eyes will never see him again, my hands will never again hold his hand. The image we have formed of the person remains essentially unchanged, but a radical change appears in our relationship. As I have said, and although it may sound trivial, it cuts deeply into the inner life in each individual case. A human soul whose physical incarnation once impressed us becomes a memory. Let us now compare a memory like this with others that we construct from our experience. We live a great part of our physical life in memory. We know what we ourselves have experienced. We know, for example, the events that have befallen us. We retain these in thoughts. And we know that through these thoughts we can revert to the times when the events in question took place. When we examine the content of our memories, we find that in the greater part of our thoughts, we bear something in us that no longer exists. Past events, events that we can no longer meet in the external world as reality, for they belong to the past. Our memory of one who has gone through the gate of death, however, if we have absorbed some of the thoughts of spiritual science, is quite different to our psychic gaze. In the case of the dead, we hold thoughts in us. But these thoughts are fixed on a reality that is certainly not accessible to us in the external physical world, but that exists in the spiritual world. Although it cannot enter the sphere of our vision, the object of such thoughts is present. That is quite a different kind of memory from the mere memory of what occurred here in the physical world. If we observe this fact in relation to the entire cosmos, we realize that when we remember someone who has died, we carry in our soul thoughts of a being who is in the spiritual world. Now, we know, and this must be clear from the last three lectures, footnote, this lecture is the fourth of a series given in Berlin, The Forming of Destiny and Life After Death. The titles of the previous three lectures were, quote, Spiritual Life in the Physical World and Life Between Death and a New Birth, unquote, quote, The Experience of the Effects of the Last Earthly Existence and its transformation into forces for the next incarnation, unquote, and, quote, the substrata of soul life and spirit life after premature death, unquote. End of footnote. Let me read that sentence again. Now, we know, and this must be clear from the last three lectures, that the longing of souls incarnated on earth ascends to the spiritual world, and that the consciousness of those who have passed through the gate of death and now live in the intermediate world between death and rebirth extends down to what happens here in the physical world. We can say, the souls who live discarnate lives in the spiritual world receive into their consciousness from the physical world whatever their spiritual gaze and their spiritual vision directed down to earth enables them to perceive. I pointed out in one of the last lectures how souls, still incarnated here in physical bodies, can be perceived by the souls of the so-called dead, and contrasted this with the perception such souls have of other discarnate souls living in the intermediate stage between death and rebirth. I explained how, in order to perceive in the spiritual world, souls living there must continually be active. For instance, they may be aware that another soul is near them, but to perceive that soul, they must become inwardly active. They must, as it were, construct an image. The image will not appear by itself, as it does here in the physical world. In the spiritual world, you first have the thought, someone is there. Then you must, as it were, inwardly experience the being there of whoever it is. Then the image of the other soul will arise. The perceptual process is reversed. There is an important difference between how souls in the spiritual world construct images of other souls in the spiritual world and how they construct images of souls still incarnate on earth. Discarnate souls must produce the image of other souls in the spiritual world entirely out of themselves. They must be thoroughly active in doing so. But when it is a question of a soul still living on the earth, a discarnate soul may remain more passive. In this case, the image rather comes to it. the effort needed to approach the image of a soul living on the earth is much less than that required to produce the image of for one already discarnate. Less inner activity is required. For those souls living between death and rebirth, this difference in inner activity represents the distinction between discarnate and incarnate souls. If you grasp this, you will realize that after the soul has passed through the gate of death and lives the life of the spiritual world, it not only beholds the beings of the higher hierarchies and the other human souls living with it in the spiritual world, but also beholds the world of souls to which it was related before going through the gate of death. This is an important distinction. Human beings on earth are actually surrounded by earth existence and can only grasp the other world in spirit, but on entering the spiritual world this is reversed. A soul in the spiritual world can see our world unaided, without any effort, although from there it is the, quote, other world, unquote. But to make its own world, the world where it exists after death, perceptible, the soul must always exert itself. It must always construct this world for itself. Thus, when a soul is in the spiritual world, it must continually work on that world, while what is then, quote, the other world, unquote, always arises as if by itself. For discarnate souls, it is in this other world, which for us is this world, but from there is the other world, that earthly souls and what lives in them, above all in those human souls with whom relations were established during life on earth, rise up into awareness. Such human souls appear to the discarnate. At the same time, within, quote, the ocean of spiritual perception, unquote, if I may put it this way, created in our earthly souls by the spiritual world, memories of those who have passed through the gate of death occasionally appear. Imagine this very vividly. Let us suppose, hypothetically, that we lived in a time when no one could remember any dead person. The dead would still perceive those human souls in which no memory of the dead existed. And then suppose that into the ocean of spiritual perception, that discarnate soul can offer memories of the dead. Let me read that again, excuse me. And then suppose that into, quote, the ocean of spiritual perception, unquote, that discarnate souls can offer memories of the dead now enter. They live there. That is something added by human free will and love to what the dead can always see from the other side. It is something added. Here again we come to a point where an important question arises for the spiritual researcher, a question that the spiritual investigator must research. What does it mean for souls who have passed through the gate of death to see, streaming by them, embedded in the souls ebbing and flowing in our world, memories of the dead? When those souls perceive these memories, what do they mean to them? When such a question arises in spiritual investigation, it must first of all be thoroughly experienced. One must really live into it. If one begins to seek speculatively for a possible solution, a possible answer to such a question, one will certainly arrive at a false conclusion. For the efforts of the ordinary brain-fettered understanding provides, as a rule, no solution. A solution can be arrived at only through inner activity. The answers to questions relating to the enigmas of the spiritual world descend from the spiritual world as by an act of grace. One must wait. There is really nothing else to be done but to live with the question and meditate upon it again and again. One must allow the question to live in the soul with all the feelings it arouses and then calmly wait. One must wait until one is worthy. That is the right word, worthy to receive an answer from the spiritual world. And, as a rule, this comes from a place quite different from what one would expect. The answer comes from the spiritual world at the right moment, that is, at the moment when one has sufficiently prepared one's soul to receive the answer. Whether it is the right answer can as little be decided theoretically as any statement concerning physical reality. Only experience can furnish the criterion. To those who always deny spiritual reality by saying that it cannot be proved and that everything must be proved, I would like to ask a question. Would it have been possible to prove the existence of a whale in the physical world if no whale had ever been discovered? Nothing can be proved unless it can be shown to be a reality in the same way. Even in the spiritual world, one must experience reality. What enters one's consciousness as the solution may, of course, appear in many different forms, according to the preparation of one's soul. The truth may present itself in many ways, but nevertheless it must be experienced as the truth. For example, if one lets the above question live rightly in the soul, there can appear, apparently from quite a different place, an image, an inner image, which I may say gives one an inner impression of offering something toward the solution to the riddle in question. The image may arise of a person who lets themselves be photographed, or allows a portrait to be painted. The principal point in the picture will be something physical, an image of a physical thing, and around it, finally, also all that has to do with the realm of art, the artistic presentation. Now, if you consider how physical life runs its course, you can recognize that it does so in such a way that we are confronted with external beings, the outer occurrences of nature. These run their course and expire. Likewise, all our human concerns run their course, all that we do and plan to meet our needs, all that we create as history. But beyond all this transience, we also seek something that really has nothing to do with the immediate needs of life. The human soul is aware that if nature and history merely ran their course in relation to the satisfaction of human needs, life would become barren and desolate. Therefore, we create something above and beyond the course of nature and necessity in physical existence. We feel the need not merely to see a certain landscape, but also to copy it. We organize our lives so that anyone connected with us can get copies, as it were, of it. From this starting point, we can think of the whole realm of art as something we create on earth that is of a higher reality than the ordinary reality of nature and history. Just think what the world would lack if there were no art, if art did not produce something from its own resources to add to what is self-existing. Art creates something that one may say need not exist. If art did not exist, all the necessities of nature might still go on. One may suppose that even if no single copy of nature had been made, no artistic representation, life would still pursue its course from the beginning to the end of the earth. You can imagine what humanity would then lack. Theoretically speaking, our earth would be punished by its inability to evolve art. For in art we have something that extends beyond life. Think of all that art has created in the world, and also consider human progress. In a sense, these are two parallel processes, the necessities of nature and history, and inserted into it, the stream of art. Now, just as art, in a sense, enchants a spiritual world into the world of physical reality, so the memories that fill our souls here likewise conjure another world into the world of those who have gone through the gate of death. As far as the dead are concerned, the world here might run its course without any memories living in the souls here, memories born of love and all our human relationships. But then the world of the dead would be the same for them as our world would be for us, if we could find nothing in it that transcended ordinary reality. That is an extraordinarily significant thing. Our thoughts of love, our memories, and all that passes through our soul in connection with those no longer with us in the physical world, create for the dead in their world something analogous to artistic creations in ours. Here in the physical world, we must bring forth artistic creations out of our own soul. We must contribute something out of our own being. But for those in the spiritual world, the opposite must occur. Their art, as it were, must be brought to them from their other world, from the souls who are still incarnated here. Souls whom they can contemplate more passively than they contemplate those already with them in the spiritual world. What the course of nature and history would be to us were it to run on simply of itself without art, without everything we can create above and beyond our immediate reality, such would our world be for the dead if the souls still on earth retained no memories of them. We do not really know that this is so in our ordinary physical lives. These things are not known by our ordinary consciousness, but our deeper subconsciousness is aware of them, and our life is always directed in accordance with this subconscious knowledge. Why, for instance, have human communities always placed a high value on the celebration of All Souls' Day, Days of the Dead, and so on? And those who cannot share in the usual memorials for the dead nevertheless have their own days set apart for this. Why is this? Because in the depths of our subconscious lives what may be called a dim knowledge of what takes place in the world through our keeping alive the memory of the dead. The receptive soul of the seer who celebrates All Souls' Day, or a Sunday devoted to the dead, or some similar day when many people come together full of the memories of their dead, sees the dead participate in the ceremony. With certain natural differences, the experience for the dead is similar to what happens on earth when people visit a cathedral and see forms they could never have seen if something had not been created out of the artist's imagination, if something had not been added to physical existence. For the dead, the experience is similar to what happens when those on earth listen to a symphony or music of that sort, Something is reproduced in all our memories that, in a sense, transcends the ordinary level of existence. And just as art inserts itself into the physical course of human history, so do these memories insert themselves into the images of their world that the souls between death and rebirth receive. In customs such as All Souls' Day that have arisen in human communities, the secret knowledge contained in the depths of the soul finds expression. Many worthy customs are connected with this deeper subconscious knowledge. We stand before such interconnections of life with still greater admiration if we can permeate them with what spiritual science offers us. Each time a dead soul encounters a remembrance of itself in the soul of a living human being with whom it was in some way connected here on earth, it is as if something streams over to that soul that beautifies its life, enhancing its value. Just as beauty comes to us here from art, so beauty streams to the dead from what rays forth out of the hearts and souls of those who live with, who keep them in memory. This is one connection between the world here and the spiritual world there, and it is closely connected with another thought that should arise from what can be cultivated in spiritual science, the thought of the value and importance of earthly life. Spiritual science does not lead us to despise the earth and all that it can bring forth. Rather, it leads us to consider life as a part of the whole life of the cosmos, a necessary part, organized to conform with what is at work in the spiritual world, a part without which the spiritual world would not appear in its perfection. Whenever we turn our attention to the fact that out of our physical world beauty must spring forth for the dead, we must also be struck by the thought that the spiritual world would lack this beauty if there were no physical world with human souls in it, who, while still in the body, are able to evolve thoughts full of feeling and emotion for those no longer in their world. It meant a great deal when whole peoples in ancient times repeatedly and reverently devoted themselves in their festivals to thoughts of their great ancestors, uniting themselves in feeling for the sake of the memory of their great ancestors. It was of great significance when they inaugurated such memorial days. It always meant the flashing up of something beautiful for the spiritual worlds, that is, for the souls living there between death and rebirth. And although here on earth it is somewhat foolish, to put it mildly, to take special pleasure in one's own portrait, nevertheless it is important for the dead to find their images in the souls who still remain here. For we must bear in mind that humanity on earth appears very different to us when we consider it from the standpoint of the spiritual, from the standpoint of the dead. We have often emphasized this. Here on earth we are enclosed within our skin. What we designate as I, and what is most precious to us, is shut in by our skin. This holds good even for the most selfless people. Perhaps it even holds good for them to a higher degree than for those who consider themselves less selfless. We value first and above all what is shut up inside this skin. Then comes the rest of the world. We look at what lies outside our skin, at this quote-unquote rest of the world, as the outer world. But the most significant thing is that once we are outside our bodies, for instance, when we die or in higher states of meditation, we are one with the outer world and live in it. I have often described this opening, this expansion of oneself over the outer world. And when we are outside our bodies and have gone into the outer world, that outer world is just what we have experienced here between birth and death. In a sense, we may say that the outer world becomes the inner world. What is now our inner world becomes our outer world. Hence that significant experience on entering the land of the spirit, quote, thou art that, unquote, described in my book, Theosophy. Footnote, Theosophy, an Introduction to the Spiritual Processes in Human Life and in the Cosmos, Hudson, New York, Anthroposophic Press, 1994, end of footnote. As our outer world there, we look out upon what was here, our inner world, encompassed by our I. But the soul there, which cannot be egotistic as it were, but the soul there, which cannot be egotistic as it was here, looks back on the thoughts that come to meet it as thoughts of itself. That is what comes to meet it as an outer world. As such, it really ought to be incorporated within the compass of what we may designate as the beautiful, as that which exalts one. Then into what has become the outer world, that is the memory of all we have undergone between birth and death, comes something that does not live in it, does not belong to our life, but lives in other souls and relates itself to us. That really means the insertion into that world of something transcending ourselves, transcending what has then become our outer world. Just as here on earth some work of art rises above ordinary reality as it exists in itself. And while it is improper for people here to be in love with themselves, and thus also with their own portraits, there it is quite natural for a soul to stand in that relation to what arises as an image, another presentation of itself, in the souls left behind. It is natural for a soul in the other world to stand before an image of itself, in the same way as on earth we stand before a landscape and compare it with the scene itself. Thus, when the question comes before the soul, what does it mean for the souls who have passed through the gates of death to see, streaming by them, embedded in the souls ebbing and flowing in our world, memories of the dead? One is shown a soul presented with his or her image, and from this one finds a way of answering the question. Speculation, as a rule, does not help at all. One must learn to wait patiently. In reality, one should work only on questions, as these relate to the spiritual world. The answers can be given to the human soul only by a revealing act of grace. The end of Lecture 6, and also the end of Part 1 of this book, the next part is Part 2, is called Practice.